Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to OS News Podcast, episode number 42, iOS, the Internet, and Everything. I am joined today, I'm Croc Kamen, and I am joined today by OS News Editor-in-Chief Tom Herlader.
Hello.
And our regular visitor, Tess Flynn.
Hello.
Good.
I don't think you can call her a visitor anymore, by the way.
No, you're pretty regular, and but, you know, I never expected that of you. It's always appreciated every time.
Yeah, true.
Because it's like crazy hours. It's always it's always a different time zone every time we call you.
Yeah, this week it's Central. Next week it's going to be Eastern, and the week after that it's probably going to be Berlin.
Yeah, it's my time zone. Epic.
Oh, you want to meet up and get some beer? I'll be in Duisburg on the 4th.
No beer. Martini. That's fine. I don't drink beer.
Oh, did you see all the Silverlight developers getting all angry over Microsoft going
Windows
HTML5?
8?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just gonna.
That was about to happen.
Yeah, but it's all. I've got a number of stories on that, like still waiting in the back end, but I'm kind of waiting for some sort of official response because.
Don't die.
Yeah, exactly. Whoa. I'm 26. You think I know by now that you shouldn't talk and eat at the same time. Yeah. No, but I'm basically waiting for some sort of official thing so I can make a kind of balanced write-up. Because this really isn't, like, my kind of subject. So when it's not my kind of subject, I'd rather have two sides that I can, you know...
The Windows 8 announcement is surprisingly sparse on technical details.
Exactly.
They mentioned HTML5 as a buzzword, but what do they really mean by that?
I think it was just a giant mistake to do it like that. But they did the same thing with Windows 7. They announced it at D in 2007 or 8, I don't know. And they only showed like the little touch bit, and that's it. No technical details, just one feature, and they focused on that, and that was it. And then in September of that year, they did like the massive announcement with a beta or a release candidate, with a beta release, and you know, all the technical details and everything. And they're going to do the same thing this year. So in September, they have this conference where they're going to give all the technical details. But they shouldn't have focused on the HTML5 thing. The only reason they said that was for buzzword potential. But if they hadn't said HTML5 and JavaScript, nobody would have said anything about, you know, Silverlight and .NET and all that stuff. Even though I'm convinced that it's all in there, because you can't have an operating system like Windows with just HTML5 and JavaScript. Not even WebOS.
Yeah, it's still Windows. Of course, Silverlight will run on it. It's just what they probably mean is that framework that they're using to drive that Dash interface is probably, you know, running on IE10.
And probably just the interface, right? Not all the stuff underneath. That'll still use all the things that you use in Windows today. I think it's just that the interface elements of it, the graphical elements of it, are using... That's what I would say. That's using, you know, CSS and HTML5 and stuff like that. At least
the implication that I got from a lot of the presentation material was that new applications are to be written in this quote unquote HTML5, whatever, you know, Microsoft thinks that is.
Yeah. That could mean anything, because if they're just widgets, like the tiles are just widgets, well, then yes, that would make sense to have it as HTML5. Let's just drop that 5 bit and call it HTML and CSS, because that's what it is. Yeah. And, but what drives it could be anything.
At least that's the impression that I get. And, like, you know, the rest of the application can use whatever technology is in there, you know. Except probably for, I mean, they're probably going to downplay Win32 because of the ARM release and everything.
Yeah.
I would think that they would start downplaying that. It was still available, but they're probably going to downplay it right now. But, you know, wait until September, and then we'll see. You know, they did botch the announcement, though. They shouldn't have said anything about, like, HTML this or JavaScript that. They should have just shown it, and that's it. You know, end of story. That would have been much better. But, you know, Microsoft's Microsoft, right?
Well, if they only did show it, then you would have everyone worried about the UI apocalypse.
They were still worried about that now.
Well, yeah, but now they're worried about other things too, so they're distracted.
Yeah, okay, that's true. That is true, though. Yes. Almost done.
I keep being curious about exactly why Microsoft is putting so much, for lack of a better term, cloudification into Windows 8. My guess is that they're looking at WebOS with their forthcoming tablet system, as well as the growing buzzword of the post-PC era, as well as Chrome OS, and wondering, are they looking down the death of their own operating system?
I think they're more looking
operating
at
system irrelevancy, because now all of the relevant toolkits can be done either multi-platform or on the web.
I think it's more about combining or unifying, basically, if you will, phones, like Windows Phone, regular Windows, and the Xbox. I think that's more of the issue. Like, you know, they're going to be able to offer software developers like everything, not just the front end, not just the, you know, the tools to write applications, but also, you know, the software to actually run the back ends that are online, like so Windows Azure and all that crap. They can offer the entire stack, and I think Apple can't offer that right now, at least not yet, because I'm not sure though. By the way,
not really. They're kind of more interested in the consumer space.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And
this is, you know, Microsoft are more really going after IBM and especially Oracle now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Because Oracle have got themselves an operating system with Solaris. They've got themselves a hardware with some.
Sorry. Okay, I'm going to make a cup of coffee and then I'll be right back.
So, what do we want to cover?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay, well, let's go back as far as I can remember in recent times, and the whole Microsoft buying Skype for $8 billion.
Yeah, they're spending eight point whatever billion dollars on a product that has never made any profit whatsoever in its entire existence. It's got massive debt.
And was overpriced at $2 billion when it was sold to eBay. In fact, anyone who has ever owned Skype has only made money because Microsoft just bought it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. $8 billion for something that's not making any money. Yeah, it's their biggest acquisition, isn't it, for Microsoft? I believe it is. And I'm not they're probably going to build it into everything, but $8 billion?
Yeah, that's, but even then, the technology isn't that amazing. They can write their own voice over IP system if they so desired and build it into everything. Why do they need Skype? Yeah, why do they need Skype to do that?
In fact,
they didn't buy it for the technology. No, they bought it for the user base.
Yeah, and the name probably.
Yeah.
Yes.
Microsoft Skype.
Skype has become a verb within the enterprise world. Yeah.
Here too. Among normal people here as well. Skype is a verb here. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I think they're trying to try and basically own that, because they just... Can you think of Microsoft naming a product that people would actually want to...
Windows?
But it's not a verb. You don't exactly say Windows Live Messengered.
It is here. MSN is a verb here. MSN, the messenger. It's called MSNing.
Yeah.
MSNing, literally.
Well, yeah, but they killed that off. It's not called MSN anymore. It's called Windows Live Messenger.
Yeah, but people still call it MSN.
People still call it MSN,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably one of their only successes.
Yeah, but then again, has Apple really been successful at verbing anything? I mean, they've been successful with things like, in America at least, with an MP3 player being synonymous with an iPod, but we still call it an MP3 player, not an iPod. And a mobile phone is still a mobile phone and not an iPhone. But have you ever heard of someone saying, let's FaceTime together? I mean, it makes no sense. I've never heard anyone say that, ever. And it would sound even weirder in Dutch, so... Right, but anyway, yeah, it's kind of a weird purchase. I mean, I'm sure that it's for all the users, it's probably worth something. But $8 billion, you know, it's a hell of a lot of money.
Skype really hasn't come up with a reliable business plan. They've added a whole bunch of stuff to Skype over the last few versions in an attempt to make money off of it, when really Skype Credit is about the only way for them to make any serious money, as well as Skype In and Skype Out.
Yeah, and, you know... Skype is kind of a bubble company, right? Technically. I mean, I know they, you know, the bubble has already burst, like in the early 2000s, but technically they are a bubble company as far as I know, kind of like Groupon, which is sort of a, you know, a, what do you call it?
Ponzi scheme?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Skype is not a Ponzi scheme, but it is, you know, similar in that it, you know, it's not making any money. It's only costing money. And it, you know, it has a massive debt that it can't pay off. So it's basically earning money and then putting it into the debt that it can't pay off. So I just don't really understand, as a mere mortal with zero business sense other than running a tiny translation company, you know, how you can do that, how you can spend so much money that you don't have and then get bought up by Microsoft for $8.5 billion and laugh all the way to every bank in the world. I just don't get it. I mean,
well, there's a few different ways that you can think about this. It might be that Skype alone cannot make enough money to sustain itself. But if Microsoft bakes that into other parts of its ecosystem, it might be able to pull a profit from that by using the technology and leveraging the community. For example, I know that there's a Windows Live Messenger on the Xbox, and technically you can do video chat if you have a Kinect. But who's going to do that if all of your friends are going to be available on Skype? So
yeah, that makes sense.
That's the thing. If they port that to the Xbox and make that built into the dashboard, then it becomes very standard.
Yeah, but then how do they generate money out of that? Because people aren't going to be paying per call to do, you know, Skype over the Xbox.
It's, no,
the
but
service
it
doesn't
will
really
be
work like
it's
that.
A value-added component.
It's a
Yeah, I mean,
it's not something you keep money on as a selling point by itself. It's something that that a consumer would consider as part of the whole, yet another factor into a purchasing decision that ultimately Microsoft.
I mean, where would you rather use Skype? Like in your office, sitting behind your computer on a, you know, uncomfortable chair, or do you want to sit in your living room using your Xbox and, you know, everything built in and, you know, nothing to worry about. You just click and it works. I mean, I would rather use...
There is also a consistent rumor about the post-phone number era that's recently been cropping up over discussions of voice over IP and Skype, that the phone number, I think someone once quoted it as the most un-user-friendly invention that has sustained itself for this long. Because carriers use it to lock you into a particular identity, it's much more difficult to take it with you. And most people will not have the won't really want to bother with going through all the effort of moving it around. In the United States, at least, it's tremendously annoying to do that.
It's incredibly easy here, though.
Yes, but my thought is Microsoft being an American-centric company, they have recently have Windows Phone. So the idea of making Skype into Windows Phone as a standard component gives them more carrier independence, and that number no longer becomes important. They're trying to win the enterprise again, because having a device that has solid operating system built-in Skype support would be a serious consideration for which kind of mobile device should our business invest in? Research in Motion, Apple, or Microsoft, or Google?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it would be able to say, well, we use Skype a lot, so...
Yeah, they already. You mean they're already using it on their regular computers anyway, instead of something like Google Talk or FaceTime, right? Yeah, exactly. Okay, I get it. Yeah, in that sense.
But the idea is that Skype doesn't make money by itself. It becomes a added feature which adds value to existing products that Microsoft does make money.
Oh yeah, agree with that. Yeah. But $8.5 billion.
I can have some, please.
Yeah,
definitely welcome.
There's value add, and there's enough to buy a nation.
Future.
I mean, they could probably buy Belgium with that. I mean, seriously, it's a hell of a lot of money. Seriously.
We'll throw in Skype, Belgium, and a slice of Iceland.
No. Iceland, no. Nobody buys Iceland. Iceland is independent forever. Sorry. It's, never mind.
Greece can have it for free.
Okay, what's next? I'm just trying to find whatever.
Should we just get to the sort of elephant in the corner and talk about iOS, you know, Apple keynote crap?
Oh yeah, let's get that out of the way. That's a good idea. Basically, if you want to know what Apple announced, look at what Android, WebOS, and Windows Phone have now.
Yes.
Combine it, and that's the keynote. Next, let's go. That's basically, right?
I mean, as someone who has had an incredibly negative opinion about the Apple ecosystem over the last few years, there and how often Apple gets accuses everyone else of copying them. It's utterly delicious looking at it from the other direction, at least just once.
That's definitely true. I mean, that whole notification system, it is one-on-one, almost pixel-perfect copy of...
I mean, what was even surprising is I was staring at the keynote when they showed the notification dropdown, and it's like, let's see here, that little tiny bottom bar that you're supposed to grip with your finger has three lines on it. I pull up my Android phone, and one, two, hey!
It's kind of... Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with, you know, with good ideas being copied. In fact, I'm pretty happy that, you know, it's coming to iOS. I mean, it's good for the users. It's good, you know, for everyone. I mean, it's a great feature. But what makes it so delightful, indeed, is that, you know, I mean, they're shouting off the rooftops, and not necessarily Apple itself, but also Apple itself, but not necessarily, but of course, especially the user base, at least a very vocal section of it, a vocal part of it. And now, I mean, basically the entire keynote were things that were taken from everybody else, right? I mean, it wasn't.
Yes.
I thought that was pretty funny.
You say
except
it's good it's good for everyone except for what about the developers? Basically, Apple copied their stuff.
Again, exactly. That is true, though. But they did buy.
Yeah, apparently, when they announced how many new APIs they announced, there was a rather tepid clapping in the room. Like, yay.
Or we're...
And then they eat Sir Robin Spinstrolls.
Yeah, but you know they did the same thing with the iPad Smart Cover, which was is a one-on-one copy from a product that, you know, an independent company was making for the iPad 1, and and now what were all the features that they implemented here? I mean, didn't they implement something that Instapaper usually does? I've never used that before.
Yes,
to which the creator of Instapaper tweeted a single line response, which was four letters long.
Okay, I get
fill
it.
Fill in the gap.
Yeah, I get it. Well, it can be two, by the way. Three if you're British, so it's... never mind. So they did that one, and then there was, of course, the whole iMessage, which is basically a copy of WhatsApp and all the other 10 million IP-based text servicing things that are all
Most
over the place.
People are comparing it to BlackBerry Messenger, which seems to be the most developed and entrenched and oldest concept. A lot of these newer applications like Quick and Kakao and whatever they have now are all re-implementing BlackBerry Messenger, which also reminds me that iOS's original notification system looks a lot like BlackBerry OS 4.0.
How long ago was that? Because was that already
That's when I first got a BlackBerry. I'm not sure exactly when that was released, but it looks exactly like it, down to the placement and color of the notification icons on the home screen. It's
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and then we have iCloud, which they not only stole the name, but also the logo from some sort of other company that is now suing them.
Yeah, suing them.
Of course. I mean, what else would you do?
But Apple do have like $300 billion of cash. And I'm sure they can just pay them off like they did with the iPhone trademark.
They can probably just buy the company, sell it, and then buy them again.
just for kicks.
Oh. They could probably like buy the entire town where that company is located and then just... remove all the streets around the company so they can't do anything. Just for fun. No. What other stuff did they...
I wanted to talk about the cloud stuff because that sort of bends into an area where I'm au fait with.
You mean the internet stuff, right?
The web, really, more than that. Okay. Because obviously the whole... The iCloud announcement and everything and getting the iWork guy up on the stage, etc., that was all... The reason they've done this is because basically they've... finally gotten around to admitting that MobileMe is a complete failure. And they've just had to stop and re-architect. And essentially, what I can see with iCloud is that Apple have realized that web apps do not work in a closed ecosystem. You cannot have a closed ecosystem with all their APIs and all their iOS stuff, and then also have web apps, because they're just duplicating effort, and the web and browsers and HTML5 and all that jazz is not good enough. It's not yet up to standard and everything to do everything that's in iOS. They must have spent internally, I don't know how many thousands of man hours, trying to re-implement various, you know, Mac applications on the web, like iWork, etc., and then realize this is pointless. We will spend forever trying to retain parity between two operating systems using two different APIs, etc. And the guy at MobileMe got fired, and they pulled in someone else from another department. And I think it's at that point they realized, no more web apps. We are done. We're going to do. Our vision is that if people want to get access to their information everywhere, they'll do so because they'll have an iPhone in their pocket, not because they can log into a web app everywhere. I think that's the fundamental difference. Is that they're going forward. Web apps, they're done with that. They will make no more web apps, and everything is going to be entirely iOS-based.
Including regular desktops and regular laptops, insofar they will still exist in the coming 20 years, at least from Apple, that is.
Yes.
And if I read correctly, there's no opt-in. You are required to do this, and you have no choice over where your data goes. Is that correct?
You can choose not to use the service. You can turn it off, apparently.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all... No, they spent a lot of time on the keynote talking about how everything is encrypted over the air for this, that, and everything, like iMessage and so forth, but they didn't mention at any point that the information on their servers would be encrypted.
Yeah, well, the problem is, you know, I wouldn't be able to use it for any serious work, because all the documents that I get to translate from my translation company, they're all covered by NDA, so I can't just send them to Apple encrypted or no. It's just not right. I mean, not that anybody would actually care, but the idea is just, it doesn't sit right with me, and not just Apple, but anyone, like, you know, Google or Microsoft, whatever. It just doesn't, you know, sound right. I mean, to back up all my work, I don't use any, you know, internet-based stuff, either like Dropbox or anything, just because you can never know who has access to it on the server side. You just don't know.
Right.
You're never sure. Especially, and, you know, I don't mean this in a sort of, you know, in a really offensive kind of way, but especially since these are all American companies, and I have relatively little faith in the U.S. justice system when it comes to protecting my privacy. So it's, you know, just not comfortable.
But if I remember EU law correctly, there's actually a legal requirement to keep data within the EU for EU companies.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing. It's the same thing here. But, you know, it just doesn't make me particularly confident to send my work documents or even my own documents to large companies, especially not those. It just doesn't sit.
And even if it were encrypted on Apple's side, there's encrypted quotes, and then there's encrypted actual serious encryption.
Yep.
And we've seen this debacle with Dropbox in the enterprise space recently, where it was revealed that Dropbox, while their terms of service actually said that, yes, we encrypt all of our stuff, yes, even our own employees cannot access your data. That was actually in the terms of service. They recently changed that because it turns out, well, no, we can see the file names, we can decrypt it if we need to, and it's not really all that private. We deduplicate your data. There is no private keys being used anywhere. And at the drop of the federal government's hat, we give all our data over, which, despite the fact that I'm a U.S. citizen, also makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I can see that. It would make me just as uncomfortable if my own government did that. It's not that specifically America, but in general, that any government would just say hand over. It just doesn't you know, sit well with me. But the problem with, especially it being in America, is that I'm not an American, so I have absolutely no way of doing anything about it. You know, not anything. If it's in the Netherlands, it still sucks, but at least I'd have the ability to use like the court system or whatever to do something about it. But as a Dutch citizen, I can't do anything about anything that happens outside of my own country, let alone outside of the European Union. So that makes it, you know, difficult. So if this becomes the norm, and there's, like, for instance, all the hard drives would magically disappear, and you were forced to do it, then at least I pick a company that does it in the Netherlands, so that you at least have some way of, you know, doing something about it. If, you know,
there were some rumors prior to the keynote that one potential possibility for this iCloud service, what it could be or what shape it could be, is that Apple would release new time capsules that would act as your own data, being the cloud service and sharing everything. Because you can already sort of do this with the Back to My Mac feature, which is part of Mobile Me, and basically Bonjour over the wide area network. But, you know, these companies are not interested. Where's the value add for the companies? Apple are currently charging for Mobile Me. So where, if they're making this iCloud thing three, where are they making, how are they generating money out of this? And it's probably got to do with the fact that they have access to your data ultimately, and it acts as a whole value add, much like Skype to.
Apple is an advertisement company. People keep forgetting Apple is an advertising company just as much as Google is. People keep forgetting that. It's you know, Apple wants your data, not because they're really just, Apple doesn't just want your data to make your life easier. They want your data to make money off of it, just like Google does. But, you know, that's, and Microsoft, by the way, that's just kind of how it works. But if Apple were to, you know, do what you just said, like offer, yes, you know, a simple time capsule, whatever thing, that would be pretty awesome. But can't you already do something similar just by using free software? That's probably possible, right?
I mean, yeah, but the thing is, there's no one's just made this simply out of the box experience to make it easy enough that your data on your hard drives at home is accessible over the web. And it certainly is going to become increasingly difficult in the future because of closed operating systems like iOS that will not give you a choice of what cloud service would you like to interact with. It's your only choice is iCloud. So unfortunately, that gate is closing, and it's a real shame. I think we've mostly basically missed the point where the web should work with our data being on our computers. But there's no commercial gain for that, and, you know, you live in a capitalist system, you know, companies got to operate, and they're going to make the web that way round.
Yeah. True.
Is there anything else to say about Apple?
That's a keynote. Let me bring up the
Lion
story.
Nothing to say about that, really?
Well, the only thing that I'm... Well, My MacBook Air is gone now, but the only thing that I was pretty much really interested in is the save state stuff for applications and things like that. That's pretty interesting. That's pretty cool. But for the rest, you know, it's maintenance mode. You know, it's bringing useless stuff to the Mac that nobody really needs, like the application grid overlay. Yeah. It's just nonsense. It's just a way to say, look, we've got new features, and that's it. But while the only really interesting thing is the save state and things like that, and the other pretty cool thing, I just read that, I haven't done anything with it, is that Lion now includes an option to reboot into Safari, so that you just get Safari when you boot up.
Really?
Yep.
Yes.
Came
over the wires this morning, I think.
It's in, really? I believe it's on Mac Rumors right now. Let me get it for you.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
that,
there we go.
That's interesting.
Let me send it in the... there we go.
Oh, thanks. I was just typing it.
And it's... one of the comments was interesting. Yeah, there we go. The second comment says, you need to have the iCloud beta software installed and Find My Mac enabled before the Safari-only mode appears. So I think this is more of a test thing. Like, you know, can we do this? Can we do this? That's basically it. And again, it's a
comment. Or something for kiosks only.
Yeah, maybe it's for other purposes, maybe enterprise or otherwise, or embedded
systems. How about
systems,
the Apple Store?
Yeah, well, true, exactly. I think it's about as good as it gets, but... Wow, interesting. Okay. But it could be an Apple Store, because the Apple Store is just a glorified internet cafe, so...
Yeah. Oh, not here, but in the US, true. We don't have Apple Stores yet. Okay. Anything else in the...
I thought that would go longer, but okay.
Let me see. I'm just checking what other stuff did they announce. It wasn't a whole lot of meat in there. I mean... They talked about iCloud for like 45 minutes. It's a syncing service over the web. Next.
Yeah, it doesn't even stream media, if I read that correctly.
I'm not entirely
sure. Which is just an incredible disappointment, considering there's already two competitors in the market which actually do streaming media locker services.
Mm-hmm. It's probably more to do with the legal side of thing, because of, you know, Apple have been trying to do this the legal way, they've got all the what are called recording companies behind them that are just constantly give them grief. So, you know, Amazon just went ahead and said, "Sod you, we're gonna do this and deal with it in the courts later."
Google did it too.
Yeah,
Google did it too.
Yeah, but it's pretty interesting that we had an article on that a couple of weeks or months ago. It was complete speculation, but it was still fun, that basically any of the three or four large tech companies could buy the entire music industry. Because it was the total worth. It was maybe even less than the $8.5 billion that Microsoft just paid for Skype. So I just don't think that Google is, you know, is even afraid of or Amazon is even afraid of these media companies, because they're, you know, they've seen their business half over the past 10 years, the past 9 years actually, because the figures that I had were until 2009. So it's even worse now. So I just don't. I mean, if I were Google, I wouldn't even be scared of these media companies. What are they going to do? I mean, they have to fire the janitors at this point, probably, to still be able to make some money. It's just, you know, their irrelevance is growing, luckily. And
Still pretty powerful when it comes to courts, because, I mean, they're just becoming a lawyering business. And, you know, Google's difficulty with the whole book scanning thing could play itself out again with the music locker service, if the recording industry gets all uppity and then starts basically cutting corners off of Google and says, no, you can't do it this way, you've got to do it that way. And
yeah, but how much does the music industry rely on Google, on Google search, on YouTube to get their stuff out there?
Yeah.
So, you know, it probably a whole lot. Right?
They don't want to ever admit that the internet is making them any money whatsoever.
Exactly.
Because the internet is evil.
Yeah, so Google could, you know, probably it goes the other way around as well, that the music companies don't want to mess with Google too much.
Yeah, because Google could say, okay, we're going to remove all copyright music on YouTube today. Boom, gone.
Bam, gone. They're probably, if all the videos that are potentially copyright infringement, they probably already have them tagged, right?
Yeah.
So it's probably like a little switch. So if the music business ever gets really, really uppity and annoying about this, they could just say, okay, we're going to comply. We're going to remove all copyrighted content from YouTube. Bye-bye. And that's it. Bam. Gone. And then, you know, they're going to lose a heck of a lot of money, the music business. So
as well as the bad press from it as well, because Google just put their arms up and say, I'm sorry about this, but that's the music industry told us to do it, you know?
Exactly. So the music industry can't mess with Google too much, I think. So Google can just do this, and I don't think the music industry can really do a whole lot about it. Maybe they can do something about it, but they won't, because it'll just, you know, they'll be the ones to suffer at that point. They'll be the bad guys, and they already are the bad guys, because nobody likes the music industry except people who have a stake in it. So, you know, it's, yeah. Anywho.
Did you have anything?
What about the music match debacle? Paying $25 a year for music you already own?
I don't even want to talk about it.
I mean, wow.
I bet the guy in the recording industry.
There are many unseemly metaphors for what that sounds like to me.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
The guy who thought that up probably got a promotion for having such a good idea.
Yeah.
And it was promptly assumed into the music industry as a CEO.
Yeah. Oh, you have an idea? It's bad? Yeah, but at least it's an idea. Welcome. Yeah, that's I don't really understand that either. Why you would pay for that, you know. I mean, I'll just put the music on all my devices like in an afternoon and be done with it. I mean,
it's because the iOS system is like, actually, one thing we did forgot to mention about the keynote was the whole, you know, cutting the cable thing when they're saying about, you know, PC-less in iOS 5. But, you know, you can't on an iOS device say, this song is nice, but I'd like to go get it from Amazon MP3. Oh, I can't download anything, and I can't put it into iTunes on my iPad, as I'm still completely tied to iTunes.
Yeah, of course it is. But, you know, it sounds good. It's a good marketing blurb, right?
Yeah.
We're now PC free. No, you're not PC free. It just looks like it, but you're actually not.
Yeah. All they did was make the setup procedure less of a nuisance.
Yeah, because I just bought an iPad 2 a couple of days ago, and I had to go through the entire setup process. Yeah, so first I had to actually install iTunes, which takes about 3 days before you download and install it. Uh-huh. And then iTunes, even, I have like a super fast computer. This computer is so fast, it still makes me, you know, scared every now and then. And iTunes is still so horribly slow, you know. And then I had to hook up my iPad, and it started to sync, even though there's nothing in my iTunes. There's nothing on the iPad because it was new, and the sync took like half an hour. It's such a disaster. So
it takes me less time to copy my entire music library between my hard drive and my phone.
Well, my entire music library is two long rows of jewel cases that I can probably pick up and move faster than the iPad can sync. So
True enough. True enough.
I'm old fashioned. But anyway, yeah, it's still kind of a problematic thing. So I'm happy that, you know, for the, you know, if you have to buy an iOS device by that time, that you can just sync it from the device itself. That's pretty, activate it from the device itself. That's pretty cool. But, you know, it's not revolutionary. It's not, you know, it's not all part of the big post-BC strategy, because if it's going to be a post-BC strategy and you would no longer need Macs and all the Macs would be gone, Apple would lose a hell of a lot of income still.
Right.
So they don't want to cut that cord just yet, people. They don't want to just yet.
I don't think they ever probably will until someone twists their arm about it, because it's obvious that they're going to be making money by locking you into their ecosystem with their devices and their PCs.
And Xcode.
And this is just another add-on which is supposed to make things somewhat easier, but it's not even really Google Apps Lite. I mean, there's no web interface. You're stuck with the application that Apple dictates. And,
Wow.
All of the years of speculation and people saying, oh, this is going to be great and Apple's going to destroy everyone else, and then you get this.
Yeah.
What do you do after that? And since I'm not an Apple fan, I'm giggling a little bit over here.
Okay. I think we did cover Apple now, by now. I think. What else could we do?
Anything from E3?
Yeah, I was just about to say that before I stopped.
Connect.
Greatest invention ever.
Connect. And an iPad with controls on the side. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh wait, no. We got something else. We got something from Sony. It's just, you know, thrown its hands up in the air and said, like, okay, here's your damn touchscreen, and I'm gonna give you two of them on both sides. Now shut up. And well, that was basically. Oh, and of course, a whole lot of old stuff renewed again and again.
It's really again. Running out of steam in the games industry.
It's remarkable. I mean, those sequels. People thought that I was saying that all the sequels are going to suck. That's not what I meant. What I meant was, I mean, those sequels can still be good games. I mean, the next Elder Scrolls is going to be awesome. I already know it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with sequels, but, you know, if a good sequel is really, you know, still cool, still good, can be a good game, can be a better game than the original even, but you still got to have some new stuff, because at some point you're going to run out of things to sequel, right? So you got to have something new. So it's...
Yeah.
And Nintendo's announcements
just seem to be, let's take the same stuff and retread it.
Again!
It's
3DS and a new Wii console. What are we going to launch on it? Oh, I don't know. Maybe Mario and Mario Kart, and we're going to have a new Kirby game, and we're going to Kid Icarus, and then we're going to have Zelda, and Star
Zeldas.
Fox. And do we have anything here that's younger than 25 years?
Oh, of course.
Remember what I said earlier about Nintendo. My guess is that Nintendo is looking at the 4-year-old kid and putting, you know, the Wii U or whatever it's called and the iPad 2 in front of them and going, which one do I want to play games on? And the idea is to draw them into the Nintendo cast of characters and the different worlds that they have created. And that's how they... keep going, because eventually someone's going to have more kids and there's going to be another generation that they can do this all over again.
Well, they're just relying on everyone dying so they can just keep producing the same thing.
Yeah, but, you know, that's what I didn't understand, because if that's Nintendo's goal, then, you know, I mean, great. I mean, if people want to play games and if people want to play Mario 35, the Super Edition, I mean, fine. I mean, I don't care. I mean, if you have fun with it, you know, more power to you. But what I don't understand, what I don't understand is why are they now going to make a console that will get all the games that Xbox owners and PlayStation 3 owners have been buying for the past 3 years and release them in 2012? So that we can all buy them again. I mean, if you're a hardcore gamer, you'll already have. Are you guys still here? Okay, good. No.
Yeah. The other manufacturers don't really have that kind of iconic characters to go with it. I mean, Xbox has Halo, but that only appeals to a certain set of gamers.
Yeah, but
Nintendo's
enough to sell
strategy
versus.
is that a lot of their games can befit gamers who prefer something more difficult as well as something a lot more easily. It transcends a lot of those categories and it's been viable
True.
this long, so why should it not be viable in the future?
It's true, but I
And
would.
Microsoft and Sony they don't have that. When you think of Sony, do you think of any particular characters?
Not anymore. Certainly not
Kratos.
in. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but isn't that a
But
very
within 10
'90s view of the
seconds,
world?
you name a lot of them off of the tip of your tongue.
Kratos,
With
he's
Microsoft,
a
all you
dude
can
with.
say is Master Chief.
No, but seriously, Kratos is a dude with chains with knives on the end. How awesome is that? No, I'm kidding.
Fire
No.
shuriken lightning.
Oh yeah, what was that? That was from Yahtzee, wasn't it? The gun that fires shurikens and lightning. It could only be more awesome if it had tits and was on fire. Yeah, that thing. That was, yeah. But you know, yeah, that is true though. I mean, Nintendo. I mean, if a lot of people are happy with them, that's great. But you know, I'm a different kind of gamer, in case you haven't guessed it yet. And you know, I prefer more of a deeper experience, basically. If you want to, you know, get all mushy about it. I mean, I'd much rather have. You know, a deep and an interesting RPG from something like BioWare or from Bethesda, then I have, you know, Mario Party 9 from God's sake. Mario Party 9! I mean, Nintendo has so much money. They could be doing so many cool new things, cool new IPs, whatever, and they're not doing it.
Not only are they not doing it, they're too afraid to try something new. Like the Kirby's Epic Yarn game wasn't originally a Kirby game, it was going to be new IP, and you know, Miyamoto must have walked past the office and said, "What's this?" And they
Oh,
said, "Oh, this is
Kirby,
great
what the
good."
hell?
And yeah, they just basically rebranded it as Kirby. They're just terrified of trying something new.
Yeah, and we have so much money. That's kind of you know, because even something like Paper Mario, which was always kind of the little nasty corner of Nintendo, where all the people were who were, you know, trying to take the piss out of Nintendo itself. But even that has become stale by now. Because there have been like four of them, and they're all the same. So even the things that used to take the piss out of Nintendo, you can now take the piss out of that as being Nintendo. It's like Inception, you know.
It's fail within fail.
Yeah, exactly.
Multiple layers of failure.
Yeah, but you know, I'm kind of, you know, I'm ripping on Nintendo now. But of course, the same goes for Microsoft, who are now going to start a new Halo trilogy. I mean,
Oh.
the original Halo was already not that interesting. It, you know, it was already pretty boring. And now they're going to do a new trilogy. So that means that, you know, at the next E3, we're going to have another Halo. And the
What
E3 after
surprises
that,
me is
another
that
Halo.
they can spend so much money on these games and have and just be spitting sequels out so much, and yet the independent market is being so massively creative and successful on such tiny budgets. You know, games like Amnesia: Dark Descent,
I haven't played it yet.
and Minecraft, and there's just
Right.
Terraria, yeah.
The idea seems to be bigger when there are less people involved.
Yeah, I mean, if there's less commissions and less managers involved, I mean, it's the same with movies, right? I mean,
I mean,
it's
that's what I was going to get to. It's basically the games industry is going in the exact same direction as the film industry. Stuff is costing so much to produce that execs are becoming so scared that they are not trying anything new whatsoever.
Yeah, but
And
that's the you know the thing is there is nothing that's kind of the point I was trying to make. There is nothing wrong with games like Halo and Gears of War. If you have a lot of fun with it, you know, you know that's great. There's no problem with it. But I would expect that an industry that has become so big and that is earning so much money off things like Gears of War and Halo, and what's the PS3 equivalent, the Killzone, you know, those games sell like I don't know how much money they
Oh
make.
yeah, what was it?
Put some of that money
$1 billion?
into. Yeah, I mean, put some of that money. I mean, all these games, all these bog standard games like Gears of War, Halo, you know, they're interesting. A lot of people have fun with them. Great. I mean, I can you know sit down with a friend and have a lot of fun, you know, playing Gears of War 2 in co-op. I mean, you know, it doesn't really use any serious part of the brain, but it's still fun. You know, you can have some fun with it. It's great. But then all that money that you make, don't put all the money just into Gears of War 3. Just use some of that money to, you know. Take the brightest people that you have in your development team and say, guys, go nuts. You know, make a game about a flying light socket that shoots, I don't know, dictionaries at cats, whatever. I don't know. Do something crazy with it, but they're not doing that. And the fun part about the movie industry by that is, you know, because movies are, of course, relatively easier to make and a lot less expensive. you know, in the movie industry is much more healthy in that regard, because you have a whole lot of like small movies, independent movies from all over the world that are, you know, really interesting. And then you have, of course, you know, the big Hollywood blockbusters that are also fun. But there's kind of a, you know, there's a balance there. But in the games industry, there doesn't really appear to be much of a balance. As in, it's all these crazy, all these really beautiful new games that are basically the same from last year, right? But there's not really, these big companies aren't really using all the money that they're making to produce cool stuff on the side. They're not really doing that. And that's kind of, you know.
There's a lot of concern about this, a lot in terms of, one thing that keeps coming up to me is actually where the sales schedule comes to play. With films, you can pretty much release it at any time and you're okay. You might get more people if you release it over a particular holiday, depending on which locality it's being released in.
Or for instance, you could say, let's release it 3 weeks later because the new super movie is coming out. Let's release it three weeks later. Okay.
Right. But when it comes to video games, you're locked into the schedule. I mean, that's one thing that I've been applauding BioWare for. Yeah, go ahead and push back Mass Effect 3 a few more months. That will probably make it better. Avoid the Christmas rush.
But the only reason they're pushing back Mass Effect is because Microsoft told them to implement Kinect. That's the only reason.
Voice implementation. Come on, you're overblowing that.
I don't want that in my game because I know it's going to cut into. Now I said that I wrote that in the article, but 2 or 3 days later, BioWare put out a description, like a video of the other stuff that they implemented in Mass Effect, and those were really cool. A lot more RPG elements and stuff.
The live stream.
Yeah, exactly. It was just 1 or 2 days
really,
later.
Really
that made me very comfortable again with Mass Effect, because Mass Effect 2 was a little bit of a letdown for me as a huge fan of the first one. And but what I've seen from Part 3 is that, you know, there's all sorts of new RPG elements coming back, customization and talent adaptation and stuff like that. So that makes me really happy, as long as it's not going to be like Dragon Age 2, which was basically a big failure. So, you know, that's just that video did that live stream did comfort me quite a bit. But when I heard that, you know, it's going to be pushed back and we're going to have Kinect stuff in it, that was like, oh no, don't. But now that I've seen the other video, it's like, okay, they're still doing the stuff that, you know, gamers actually want instead of shouting at your TV, which is annoying still, because, you know, let me go on here for a sec, because I'm a huge Mass Effect fan. You know, one of the cool things about BioWare games is like the control that you have over the rest of your party, that you can say, okay, you use this specific power on that specific target and do stuff like that. But all you can do with Kinect is attack, like that, at random people, instead of like pinpointing specific powers.
But that's not what they're using it for. That's not what I heard the description was for. The Kinect integration was primarily during the dialogue tree sections, where you can actually just speak out the line of dialogue instead of having to select it on the select wheel.
And the
idea is that it gives you more of a sense that you're being immersed within the entire game world because you're seeing lines of dialogue. It seems it's gimmicky. I mean, I admit that it's gimmicky, but at least it's kind of sort of interesting a tiny
bit. It's in combat too, so you can say something like, Tali, use incinerate, and that's it. But you can't actually target with it. So you can say, Tali, use incinerate, that's it. Or, no, you can't even use a sentence. You can only say, Tali, incinerate. That's all you can say. That's kind of, you know, that's kind of weird to me because it takes all the tactics out of it. But, you know, that's just me. I mean, I play on the highest difficulty setting. I need every little bit of, you know, tactics in the game to get where I want.
Well, I have a suspicion that BioWare is probably just doing this to appease Microsoft.
Yeah,
because
probably.
Microsoft was on a tear about Kinect, and it's very obvious that everyone else is like, okay, we'll do this, and it's going to be awesome and stuff. And BioWare's like, uh-huh. Yeah, we're going to do this. And don't talk to us anymore.
Yeah. Okay, so now we need to say something specific about Sony too, because we covered Nintendo, we covered Microsoft. Now we need to talk about Sony.
Aren't they getting hacked?
The Vita. I mean, it's an interesting piece of hardware, but it does seem a little bit anachronistic at this point, right?
Yeah, it would have been much more interesting if they released that around the same time as the DS or the DSi. Now it's just like, hi, latecomer.
Yeah, or make a proper phone out of it.
The name. You should have kept NGP. That was a nifty acronym.
Vita. I don't really get it. It's kind of, it doesn't sound English to me. Not that it matters, but, you know, most of these terms are generally.
You know what it reminds me of?
Vista.
It reminds, yes.
That's what I was.
Yeah, no one wants to be reminded of that.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of as well. And then you have a touchscreen on the back. That just seems a little bit weird. It's kind of like everything in the kitchen sink, kind of like the Wii U controller. Like, there are all these gimmicks. Let's just stop talking and throw all these gimmicks at one device and then just, you know, are you happy now? That's kind of,
The Vita is like, because Sony must have had like different teams doing different things. So they've probably had the people doing the PSP were tasked to come up with the successor to the PSP, but then they had Sony Ericsson Group going off to say, okay, invent us an Android phone, and they just want to see which one pans out in the long time. I mean, the PSP Go was such an absolute flop.
Yeah.
I think they're just playing cards now, and they're going to say, okay, we're going to go the Android route, and we're also going to go our normal, you know, traditional custom PSP route and see what succeeds.
Yeah, but it seems kind of weird. I mean, I think that what kind of made it a little bit... I think what really... speaks volumes is that the most interesting things coming out of Sony during this E3 was the demonstration of Shadow of the Colossus and Ico in HD on the PlayStation 3, games that are like 10 years old and that are still, you know, rocking pretty much everything else. They're still better than pretty much anything else put out since, because, you know, they're truly different and truly, you know, new. They were back then. Now they're, of course, just, you know, remakes of the original. I think it speaks volumes that those were the most interesting things coming out of Sony, Shadow of the Colossus and Ico. I think that really, you know, basically sums up the entire, maybe even the entire E3 at that point. So, yeah, I think.
What else did they say? Minecraft? I like Minecraft. That's coming out on Xperia Play, so Sony Portable is going to get that. That's probably will sell a lot, actually, with that.
Well, of course it will, and the Xbox version will as well, because I will be buying it. Pretty obvious. I mean, just to try it out, and it'll have Kinect support. Yeah, I have no idea.
Probably will do that too. I haven't bothered with Minecraft yet because, well, too much work.
You have a life,
such as it is.
I do have to admit though that Minecraft has become incredibly boring at this point, because there's nothing more to do. I've done everything, and there's no incentive to explore. And building gets kind of boring at some point too. So. I'm kind of bored with it. I have high hopes for the 1.7 update, which will be, as Notch called it, the adventure update. So hopefully, and he announced that update right after playing Terraria, so that's kind of a good sign. So I'm hoping that a lot of the cool things that you see in Terraria are, you know, going to come to...
Yeah, he said that the adventure update will focus on making, rewarding people for exploring and for combat as well. Exactly. Try and bring some more depth to the game. That will be good. I mean, it's still a long way away from being actually released. We're still playing a beta game at the moment, so...
Yeah, that's true.
It's good it's done so well so long, so far already.
Oh, the release date is November, by the way. The 11th of November. On the exact same day Skyrim is coming out.
Because it might be delayed, though.
Yeah, but they originally picked the 11th of November because, well, it has to be done by then anyway, because after that I'll be, you know, playing Skyrim. Same as me, by the way, because, you know, Skyrim has like 300 hours of content, so from then on I think we can pretty much shut OS News down because, you know, I'll be playing Skyrim as my archer mage. So, yeah, okay, that's... I think we covered the entire E3 by now, right?
That's about now.
What others do we have?
Oh, by the way, you want to check out the website hassonybeenhackedthisweek.com, which does exactly what it says. Hassonybeenhackedthisweek.com.
Yes. Oh my god, I'm dying over here. Oh, this is epic.
Right, but it's good because it's got a list of like of the history of the hacks, because I've been losing count of them.
Yeah.
And just this week, they said Sony Japan released an announcement that an attacker exchanged 278,000 points on My Sony Club for a value of roughly $3,500.
This is epic. Has Sony been hacked this week? Yes. Oh yeah, read the hack history or the latest hack. The latest hack. There we go. What are we going to get?
It's in Japanese.
Oh, it's Japanese.
Yeah, you have to go to the hack history, and it's got an idea that someone's been stealing points.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go for a value of roughly... Oh, yeah, right. Sony Portico joins the fun. Three vulnerabilities: SQL injection, iframe injection, and coarse cross-site scripting. LilSec reads internal network maps. Source code... Russia SQL injection. Sony Europe was hit by a Grey Hat hacker. A Lebanese Grey Hat hacker exposed one of these.
That's going to keep on going. I wonder how long that's going to hold out. The PSN is still up. I mean, that's something. I thought that wouldn't last a week.
I'm interested in how many hacking attempts Microsoft is currently facing over XBL. I'd be interested in seeing those figures, like how many people are currently trying to hack Xbox Live. But at the same time, I think that Microsoft has a little bit more experience with keeping stuff like that up and running compared to Sony, which are, you know, when it comes to anything even remotely related to software, they, you know, well, we know, right?
Sonic Stage.
What about Apple? Now that they've released this whole iCloud thing, how long until iCloud pulls a Sony?
What the hell's that?
That was my roommate blowing her nose.
Okay. I'm like somebody exploding over
there. Hear that?
Well done. You're on the internet.
Oh, I thought it was like a you know, one of those a motorcycle like driving through somebody's living room. That was awesome. I mean, it'd be interesting. I don't even know what kind of software Apple will be using for the data science. You'd think Mac OS X, but is Mac OS X even capable of running, you know, the server version, that kind of stuff? Can it even do that?
No.
That sort of massive, you know, or are they going to use something from IBM or HP?
There was actually some information about them potentially that they were using Microsoft Azure and Amazon Cloud Services, but some said that there's a possibility that they may be partially using some of those whilst they get up to get their network data center online.
Yeah, I would think Apple would be the kind of company that would put a lot of effort into spoofing what it tells the outside world it is using, even on a technical level. That would so fit Apple, even if they're using, like, you know, Microsoft software, that they would, you know, put some sort of, you know, artificial wall out there that if you were to try to find out on a technical level what it's using, that it would report that it's using Apple software instead of, you know, something from Microsoft or Google or Amazon.
With the death of their Xserve line, exactly what are they using to power iCloud? They're using something. Is it a custom build of OS X or what? What else is it?
Well, you know,
because the picture they had of iCloud didn't look like Xserve's to be.
Well, they could be, you know, maybe they have created some sort of custom, you know, iOS Mac OS X thing.
No, I got a better idea. It's AIX.
What is that again? I remember that.
That was a derivative of Unix that was implemented by IBM and Apple way back in the day.
Ice. Okay, there I get it. Yeah, there we go. I mean, IBM is still using that, right? Or selling that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah, no, I was confused because I usually call it Ikes because, you know, in the Dutch kind of way. But I was like, AIX, what the hell is that? But of course, it's just you know, Ikes. So yeah, I know what that is.
Okay, well, Microsoft admit freely that they run Linux servers internally. So I don't think Apple would be that bothered. They probably are running Linux or FreeBSD or a custom version of OS X since it is FreeBSD on the hood anyway. Because, I mean, this is for data crunching, not for looking pretty.
Oh, they're probably, yeah, but still, you know, Apple is proud, right? So, I mean, but I could actually see them using some sort of custom version of Mac OS X, you know, security through obscurity and stuff like that. Nobody knows it. Nobody knows what to look for. It makes sense. I mean, right?
Don't know enough about it.
Neither do I.
That's just supposition. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, well, should we move on? I think we've really covered enough.
I have no idea how long we've been talking.
About an hour.
Okay. Is there anything we should, like, do before that we really can't miss before we stop?
I don't know. Is there some user segment that we haven't annoyed yet?
Oh, yeah. HP released a touchpad in the Netherlands, you. Well. Okay, now it wasn't. Now I know it wasn't a motorcycle.
Can you please cut that out? I don't think we have to have everyone listening to that on the pod.
I'll cut it out.
Hey, my nasal pharmonics are a thing of beauty.
My nasal tracks are a thing of beauty.
Yeah, you should probably cut this out, though. I mean. I think we got everything.
Yeah.
And I need more coffee anyway. So.
haven't even started mine.
I got to work today still. So, you know, freelancer, yay!
Right, let me just do an extra.
Yeah, there we go.
Right, thank you everybody for listening, and we'll wrap things up now. Feedback, obviously you can comment on the website osnews.com when we publish this podcast. You can email us at, I believe we've got a mailing group at podcast@osnews.com, but the usual email address is crew@osnews.com.
Yeah.
And that's about all, really.
I think it is. See you all next time, I suppose.
Yep. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Rock on.